Two down in the books and one to go. Thank you so much for being with us, and it's going to be a busy third and final hour here on the Lowdown. Nate Lundy's going to join us here in just a heartbeat, and Curtis Crabtree of Sports 950 in Seattle covers the Seattle Seahawks, covers the Washington Huskies as well. It's a big weekend in college football. We're going to talk to him at 2:30. Of course, your Sacramento Kings take on the Philadelphia 76ers tonight at the Golden One Center. We'll get you all prepped up for that. It's actually a really good night of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of other good games that'll be happening before the Kings and Sixers that we'll bring your attention to. Sac State football, the Causeway Classic, is coming up. Sac State and Davis at Hornet Stadium on November 18th. We've got your tickets for that right now. We got a family four-pack, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We will get you set up with those tickets. Happy to bring in our good friend, our fantasy football expert, and host of the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour, Nate Lundy. You can send your fantasy questions to us here on the text line at 441140. First order of business, Nate, pick up Martellus Bennett, right?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
That was easy.
Look, we know what the Patriots do in terms of utilizing the tight end. So I think here's what I would tell you. If you've got a bench spot and you have Gronkowski, to me, Martellus Bennett's the equivalent of having a handcuff for a running back. Otherwise, I'd rather have somebody that's a first option on another team than a second option with the Pats.
Okay. How about the other kind of pressing breaking news of the day? How long do you let the body cool before you approach someone that might be in this room that has Ezekiel Elliott that you want to maybe approach them on a trade to offer them a running back? What's the appropriate time that you give someone to grieve about Ezekiel Elliott?
Well, I think that, first of all, people probably started grieving about Ezekiel Elliott in August, and this has just been a long, drawn-out process for them. And so, first of all, I feel bad, but look at it this way. If he comes back, he's coming back on December 24th, which means we're talking about week 16. So if you get him back, you're talking about having him for your championship game, and that's it. If you are that confident that you're going to make it all the way through your league to the championship game and you want to stash him for that reason, go right ahead. But unless he wins another appeal, as far as I'm concerned, he's droppable at this point.
Did you just try to propose a trade to me with Nate Lundy on the phone? Is that what you just did?
Oh, is that how you heard that?
That's exactly how I heard that.
Yeah, that's actually what I was trying to do.
Well, you got Kamara on your roster.
I do.
Mm-hmm. You want to send him this way?
Adrian Peterson?
You want to send Adrian Peterson? Okay, Adrian Peterson tonight. Now, let's talk with Nate here because some of these texts are coming in at 44-11-40. Adrian Peterson tonight against Seattle. I'm going to guess. I don't think you like this game. The over-under, I think, is at 40. I don't think you're feeling this one tonight.
No, I'm not feeling it, but what I am feeling is the volume. If they're going to keep handing the ball to Adrian Peterson 30-plus times, even at a 2.5 yards a clip carry, you're still talking about a guy that's at 80, and that's if he's at 2.5 yards a carry without a touchdown. So, I don't like this matchup, but I also know that Arizona doesn't have a whole lot of other weapons they can use offensively. So, at this point, he may actually somewhat be a play that you're interested in if you've got some other depth at running back to help get you some points, because if he can cross the goal line and manage to get you a touchdown, get you those 6 points, he could easily be worth it, because Arizona's made it clear that whenever possible, they're going to hand the rock to AP until the guy just completely runs out of gas.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that last week, Nate. To hear that during the broadcast, that's the most carries he's ever had in a game. I just would have never – the yards was impressive, but the amount of touches, I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, no, you're right. And again, where we look, especially from a fantasy perspective, we look at volume. It's why, to me, frequently the stat at the end of the game that matters more to me from a wide receiver perspective, for example, or even tight ends, is how many targets they had as opposed to catches, because that tells you that the offense is either looking his way or the quarterback is looking his way. And sometimes you just need things like that to click going forward. I'll use Evan Ingram as a good example. He got targeted 10 times last week. Now, he only caught 4 of them. And that's a problem, and I think that's actually an anomaly for him. But this is a guy that is constantly being looked at by Eli Manning. So that tells you the volume is there, and it's just a matter of pulling him in, and that's how you get the points. So if you've got volume, and Adrian Peterson's going to have volume, you may have to ride him if you don't have a better option or if you're sitting in bye week hell.
Jason, you and I are going to revisit this trade conversation here in just a few minutes. But I want to bring this up. Nate Lundy with us here on the Lowdown. Just to reiterate, I know you've said this before, but for those who have missed it, Ezekiel Elliott is out. He's likely out for the next 6 games. You do not like Alfred Morris moving forward for the Cowboys.
I just have a hard time right now going with what I've seen out of that backfield. I do believe that those guys can run, but none of them are Ezekiel Elliott. And so, you know, I've said it before that, in my opinion, there are some guys that have been, I don't want to say up and coming, but certainly have shown some promise over the last several weeks that I'd feel a lot more comfortable with if they happen to be available. A good example is Orleans Darkwa for the Giants. I think, I think C.J. Procise could be a potential sleeper play in tonight's game. I feel better about that than about a question mark and a running back by committee that's going to exist in Dallas.
I think I asked you last week about Dak going forward with maybe Zeke being out. How about any of the receivers? We saw Terrence Williams play well last week. Beasley got a couple. I mean, anybody in Dallas, other offensive pieces that might be worthwhile?
I think Terrence Williams, we may be seeing, I don't want to say the emergence of a star because Williams has done this before, but I think we could be seeing the emergence of him being involved in the offense more. Last week I actually on one of my hits that I did, I don't remember if it was with you guys or another station, but I'd said that I thought Bryce Butler might be a deep sleep opportunity, and it turned out that Terrence Williams was instead. I think this is another opportunity this week for Terrence Williams. I think you're just starting to see them spread the ball around. I think we've seen this out of Dallas the last several years. Cole Beasley has been a benefit of it before. I don't think that this necessarily changes a ton of the value of Dak Prescott overall. I think that he's obviously benefited by having Zeke back there. But Dallas is going to continue to run the ball, which means he's still going to have opportunities to look downfield, and he may do some of those short passes to a guy like Terrence Williams, like Cole Beasley. So I do think that either of those guys are available to you and are good options if you're sitting in a spot where you don't have any help this week because of byes or injuries.
A lot of text coming in here now, Nate, 44-11-40. Get your fantasy football questions to us in here. We'll try to get them answered while we have Nate on the air. One of them, I'm just seeing a prevailing theme here on a couple of texts. How do you feel about Kirk Cousins against Minnesota this week?
I think it's a tough matchup for him because I just think the defense of Minnesota is pretty good. That said, you're also talking about a Vegas opportunity that's got the over-under at 42. I mean, there's actually, to be honest, you were talking about it earlier, and you know I harp on the over-unders. All the Vegas over-unders this weekend are, frankly, garbage with the exception of the Dallas-Atlanta game. They're all kind of expected to be low-scoring affairs. We know that there'll be a couple of games that probably buck that trend, but the wise guys in Vegas are not expecting a lot of scoring this weekend. So it's going to be, to a certain extent, throwing some darts with some players. Kirk Cousins is, I don't want to say matchup proof because he just hasn't shown me that yet. He should put up some points. My bigger concern for him is that, you know, Jamison Crowder may not go. Josh Doctson is sort of a flash here and there. You got to lean on a Vernon Davis. I feel like his receiving weapons have sort of deceived him over the course of the last couple of weeks. And you may wind up as a fantasy owner paying the price for that if you've got Kirk Cousins, because the receivers just aren't helping him out.
You know, Nate, I'm sure in a lot of leagues you may be getting closer to that if there is a trade deadline. They don't let you go too much farther than this. If you had, is there a guy or two that you're thinking of that, you know, this first half is probably going to be their best half, someone you'd be looking to sell high at this point?
I think that, the problem is there's probably nobody in your league that's willing to do it. But, you know, there's a lot of offensive weapons on some of these teams that have gone from being offensive to being offensive. One of them is Houston. One of them is Green Bay. The other one's right here in Denver with me. I think that unless you're talking about garbage points, it's really hard to trust anybody offensively on any of those three teams. Now, what you may be able to do, and I've seen some questions come my way on Twitter about this, is if you're in a keeper league, but you're kind of in the running right now, you might find somebody that's out of the playoffs or maybe isn't likely to make the playoffs who might trade you for one of those guys for someone that can help you right now. And I've had a lot of fantasy owners, you know, tell me, oh, well, I can't give up this guy because, you know, he's going to be really good for me for the next 2 or 3 years. And usually what I say is, okay, how did that work out for RG3 owners? Right now it's all about winning now. And if you've got somebody on your bench that is useless to you, or maybe even somebody that's on the fringe of your starting lineup that's useless to you because of, like I talked about, an injury to Aaron Rodgers, an injury to Deshaun Watson, the fact that I think that Jake Plummer could do better right now at quarterback than anyone that Denver Broncos have on their roster, you may want to get rid of one of those guys because you got to win now, man. I'm all about the trophy. I'm all about winning the cash or whatever's on the line for you with your league. I'm not about waiting until this time next year, hoping that it pays off.
You mentioned you could do better at quarterback than anyone that Denver has. What about the running back? Do you favor CJ or Devin Booker? Well,
here's the problem. CJ Anderson still sits at number one on the depth chart. If it were up to me, Devontae Booker would be number one on the depth chart because I think he has actually looked the best. He's the one who actually, to me, has looked like that he's still got the energy, almost like he's trying to prove something. So to me, he's been the best runner. They just aren't giving him enough of an opportunity. I don't know what Mike McCoy is doing as offensive coordinator. I don't know why he is so quick to get away from the run when, frankly, that's the only thing this offensive line is capable of blocking for is the run. He keeps bailing on it. So right now, I can't trust that position. We're talking about C.J. Anderson, who back in week two, week three, we had him ranked up in our top, you know, top eight, top 10 of running backs. And right now he's barely cracking the top 25 in most consensus rankings. And that's, you know, that's because this team just seems to be so quick to go away from the run, not just when they're down in games, but they're getting away from the run when it's, you know, a 3-point or a 7-point game. This offense is just not to be trusted right now. On the flip side, though, of the question you asked me about guys that I would trade away, I will say this, as crazy as this sounds, I do believe that if you can get Demaryius Thomas on the cheap in a trade in your league, I would do it because I do think the Broncos are going to be good for garbage points down the stretch. And they also have a very favorable schedule in weeks 14, 15, and 16 when it comes to pass defense, which means they may not win a lot of games, but I do think Demaryius is going to continue to rack up some yards for them regardless of who's under center.
And just to be clear, I went full Ron Burgundy there reading that tweet. I believe Devin Booker still plays for the Phoenix Suns. I'm not positive. Yeah. I don't think he's a running back for the Broncos.
I just ran with it no matter what.
You did. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you.
Nate, last week, Damian and I both kind of looked at each other when you said, yeah, you know, if you absolutely have to or have a bunch of guys in a bye, you could play Jay Cutler, and you actually were right on. That was a good Jay Cutler. Last week, is there a guy like that this week that most people go, no, I'm not playing him? But if you're in a need, whether it's injury, whether it's buys or whatever, that you're kind of looking at, yeah, this guy could actually be a good play.
Josh McCown, hands down. It's Josh McCown, and in fact, you could talk me into loading up on Jets with your lineup. Josh McCown is one of the top fantasy quarterbacks over the course of the last 4 weeks. I mean, he's old enough to be a coach. And yet he's out there as their starting quarterback. The conversation is already being brought up about them bringing him back next year because of the performance that he's doing. I don't know if that's going to turn into Ryan Fitzpatrick syndrome or not. We've seen that before. But right now he is really performing well. He's got a great rapport going with Austin Seferian Jenkins at tight end. I think you can look to even in terms of matchup this weekend because they're taking on Tampa, who can't seem to do anything right and now don't have Jameis Winston. I think the Jets defense is even a good play. This is a week where this is where we are in Stranger Things and Upside Down world right now because, I never in a million years thought I'd be recommending Jets to you guys this time over the summer.
Just for those wondering, it's Josh McCown and the Jets against the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah. No offense. What happened there?
I wish I knew. Other than the fact that I think Jameis and his weird W, whatever that was, thing that he was doing.
Nate. Come on, man.
You didn't want one of those?
Yeah. What is that? Is that a thing? Am I missing something with the kids? I don't understand. What is that about?
No, that's not a thing. That's not a thing.
He just made it up. Okay, good. I'm just making sure, you know, you guys are pretty hip. You know, you might be able to bring me up to speed on this stuff.
Yeah, no, eating a W is not a thing. That's why he was collectively laughed at by everybody.
Happens to me every week.
Well, that's okay. When you dress up like one of the Super Mario Brothers, it's usually good for a laugh. 44-11-40, another name that keeps coming up here. I actually like this one. 44.5, that's Colts, Steelers. Juju Smith-Schuster, are you buying in, or are we going to get Bryant involved? Like, what do you do there with that second receiver in Pittsburgh?
I go with Juju Smith-Schuster. I think they're going to continue to find ways to get him involved. I think they like what they see. I think Mike Tomlin is a no-nonsense coach, and I think one of his guys tried to throw nonsense his way, and Tomlin threw it right back in his face. So I think Smith-Schuster, right now is he's performing well. I think he knows that this is his opportunity to lose, and I think he's playing like it. And I think that not only does the coaching staff like it, I think Ben Roethlisberger likes it. I think he likes knowing he's got a guy out there that's just going out there to get the job done. So I love Juju Smith-Schuster. Loved him a few weeks ago when I had people laughing at me about his name and who is this guy, and I've never heard of him. And I said, well, okay, you will in a couple of weeks. And so far it's paid off. So, yeah, I'm buying into it, and especially against that Colts defense.
I don't know if anybody would be put in this spot this week, but if they are, that Eli's their main guy and they don't have a lot of other options. What do you do about him with all those rumors about what maybe benching him and not a lot of healthy receivers? What do you do with Eli?
Well, I think you've got to keep your fingers crossed that he can take advantage of a matchup. San Francisco's given up the fourth most points to the quarterback position in fantasy so far this year. They've given up at least two touchdowns each of the last four games. So if there's ever a sort of get-right game for Eli and for Evan Ingram, who I mentioned earlier, this is going to be it. If Eli can't do it here, then, yeah, you may start not only hearing about changes coming, you may start to see changes. They may not even wait until the end of the season. But this is certainly a matchup that he can take advantage of. And, look, he's a two-time Super Bowl winner. This is a guy that knows how to get it done. I don't know whether it's the coaching staff that's messing with him. I don't know if he's got something going on in his head, whatever it is. But this is the right game because San Francisco has given up way too many points to a quarterback, and this is a good opportunity for Eli to get right.
Nate Lundy of the Fantasy Football Hour with us here on the Lowdown. Nate, I'm going to kind of bring you into a conversation that Jason and I were having a few moments ago, and you can answer this in a fantasy way if you want to or a real-life way, but we were talking about real or not in terms of the first half of the NFL season, like what's real. We're both really, really high on the Los Angeles Rams offense and believe that's real, and it's going to be real going into the second half of the season, and it's going to be real moving forward for that franchise. How do you feel about them?
I think they, what I've seen out of their offense, what I've seen that they have, I think, found what Jared Goff's strengths are and are trying to maximize them. I think they were smart to put the receivers that they put around him, and that includes Cooper Kupp, who we've talked about here on the show before, guys. I think they just made sure that he had some good weapons. I don't know, you know, that we're looking at a team that's going to finish the year, you know, at 12-4 or anything like that, but I do think that they are legit in terms of how they're performing. I think he's got them excited. I think he's got them believing, and they're taking a lot of people by surprise. The real question will come, and we know this, and that is the more film you provide to defensive coordinators, the smarter they get with scheming. And I think that that's going to be ultimately the challenge is as teams start to see more and more of Goff or of certain blocking tendencies when it comes to them trying to run the ball or what Kupp does on certain routes, it's can they still be successful? That's the first question. The second one is always if people do start to scheme differently, are you able to maneuver or are you a one-trick pony? And I don't think here through the first 9 weeks of the year that we know the answer to that yet. But they are definitely on the right direction. They're in the right trajectory. They found their quarterback. And I think the biggest thing is when you find your quarterback, it now means that you can spend your time, even your scouts when it comes to the draft, you can start to spend your time focused on all those other positions. To me, it's what benefited Tennessee. I know they're not performing well and Mariota's been hurt. But once they knew they had their quarterback in Marcus Mariota, start to look around the rest of the field and try to, I think that the Rams are now certain positions that they don't have to worry about that other teams.
Nate, want to?
There's always that fine line when you tell someone you're dropping out. Sounds like you're driving through outer space. I'm not sure if we've hit that line yet, though.
You still there, Nate?
Oh, no.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
Wanted to ask you about Josh Gordon. Would you stash him? Would you sign him? Would you pick him up, put him on your roster somewhere for the last couple of weeks, or is it just the quarterback situation in Cleveland's too messy?
I would. I would stash him just because Cleveland's got a really favorable schedule down the stretch. So if he does want to be favorable, I definitely wouldn't do it at the expense of someone that I know for a fact can benefit me. I would only do it if I'm dropping somebody off my bench that I know isn't going to see the light of day, and I might as well stash him down there in the basement and see whether or not I can use him later.
Nate, we appreciate you as always. How do you feel about your Broncos on Sunday night against the Patriots?
I'll be drinking heavily. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
That's usually your answer. It's strange.
Do we have to talk to you about something?
I feel like at some point we were supposed to intervene here and help, because it's...
Well, you know, it's the reason that I don't sit in the press box at games is because apparently they frown upon that.
Nate, you know,
we
appreciate you as always, my friend. Thank you so much.
You got it, guys. I'll talk next week.
All right. At Nate Lundy on Twitter. LUNDY. At Nate Lundy on Twitter. Get him a drink and get him your questions. He's the host of the Fantasy Football Hour, the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour. We'll talk Thursday Night Football here in just about 10 minutes, 9 minutes actually, when Curtis Crabtree of Sports 950 in Seattle joins us. And, of course, we'll talk about the Kings and the 76ers coming up here before we wrap things up as well. That's at the Golden 1 Center tonight.
Kind of a weird fantasy week. I mean, if you look at the games, the matchups, and then you have some high-profile. The Eagles are off. Mm-hmm. Raiders, people have Raiders. Or, you know, in general, you want to have Carr. You want to have Cooper, Crabtree, the different choices there. Chiefs, who have been a good offense, they are off this week. So this could be an interesting for people in fantasy just because some of your main guns could be out.
I wonder what, you know, I'm so conflicted looking at, like, Matt Ryan, right? Because we've had so many questions about Matt Ryan. Well, they're playing Dallas. Well, that should tell you he could have a big day with that secondary. But Dallas's defense has been, I don't want to say good, but their pass rush has been very good, led by DeMarcus Lawrence and everything that they're doing. And when Sean Lee is on the field, they're an entirely, you know, you hear that phrase all the time. It's the most cliche line. When he's on the field, it's a different team. Well, that's actually a fact. Like, statistically, they are an entirely different team when Sean Lee is out there, and you got DeMarcus Lawrence as well. But that's their pass rush. Will Matt Ryan be able to get rid of the ball quicker? Another note out of that game is Dez Bryant. Remember, Dez Bryant was hurt. So if you have Terrence Williams on your roster, it might be a good play for you, because Dez, you know, he said today, he didn't practice yesterday, he didn't practice today, but he did say, guys, you know me, I'm going to play. I'm thankful that the injury wasn't significantly worse. There was no tear, there was nothing. I'm just a little banged up. So he's going to play, but admittedly he's banged up.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're kind of entering that point in the season where, as a coach, you're not going to fall into anything, right? You got to be strategic with your moves, and you got to look at this situation with the Cowboys like, okay, well, how hurt is Dez?
Right.
And how real was what we saw from Terrence Williams last week? How real, I mean, is Juju Smith-Schuster going to go back to the guy that he was a month ago where we didn't even know him except he had a cool name?
Right.
Are they going to try to get Martavius Bryant worked in to make him feel better about everything that's going on? Is there enough Ben Roethlisberger to spread the ball around all three of those receivers?
And still pleasing Le'Veon Bell, right? I mean, you've got
to the tune of 30-some-odd carries a game.
Which helps them, helps the other guys too, and they've got a matchup with the Colts that you would think could be an easy day for them. You just never know with the NFL, though.
I think I'm going to answer this question on my own. I'm not nearly as qualified as Nate Lundy, but Tyrod Taylor over Matt Ryan, no chance. Tyrod Taylor, against the New Orleans Saints?
Yeah.
Nah, man, don't do that. I'd go Matt Ryan over the Cowboys defense instead of Tyrod Taylor against that Saints defense. Again, I'm not the football expert, but I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
What are you going to send me Kamara?
You've actually got enough running backs, don't you?
I don't know that I'm high on this, because I'm one of those people that have Ezekiel Elliott.
No, I know.
Well, I know. I'm just filling everybody in.
But
you
picked up Morris, which was
good
and responsible. You've got Blunt. You've got...
You want Blunt?
No. You got Howard. Henry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I'm looking for maybe a receiver.
I got Juju.
Okay.
I got Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Any of those...
Who else was I looking at? Yeah, Kareem Allen, Parker...
We'll talk.
Yeah, let's talk.
We'll talk. We'll talk with Curtis Crabtree of Sports 950 in Seattle next. Would you like some more Ezekiel Elliott news?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Ezekiel Elliott's, this according to Josina Anderson of ESPN, Ezekiel Elliott's next appeal before the Second Circuit. So there will be another appeal. His next appeal before the Second Circuit is set for December 1st.
Oh, so he'll miss a few games.
So he's going to miss a few games. He's going to miss Thanksgiving. But he is not ruled out for Oakland, though.
Mm, okay.
So that right now, he's scheduled to come back with a six-game second-to-last game of the season?
Yeah.
So week 17, that would be the...
Eagles?
So that would be the one game that he plays is the Eagles
potentially,
game.
Potentially, yeah.
Okay. So if you have him in fantasy football, like you're done.
Or is it 10 through 15?
I feel like he'd have two because
two.
The fantasy football championship is week 16,
yes,
right?
Yeah, that's when he'd be back.
So, I mean, really, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Right now, he's out six games. Let's just assume six games for sure. Cowboys making the playoffs, yes or no?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is
hot
a take.
Fire
take, Jason Ross. We're happy to bring in Curtis Crabtree, Sports 950 in Seattle. Curtis, thank you so much for being with us. I'll pose the same question to you, even though it's not related to the Seahawks. Zeke is out the next 6 weeks. Cowboys make the playoffs, yes or no?
I would say no. I think it's going to be tough with their defense to hold up without him, but maybe Dak Prescott's enough to carry him. And given the fact that there's a kind of a dearth of great young quarterbacks in the NFL, that would kind of be a good thing to see for the future of the league, to see Prescott kind of jump up there and really seize the reins. But I think they'd probably fall a little short.
I'll see what Alfred Morris does, man. We'll see what their commitment to that run game is, or if they go back to Dak Prescott throwing the ball 50 times a game, which we've seen from them. One thing that we haven't seen, though, Curtis, from the Seattle Seahawks this year is consistency. They've been all over the place. They had that incredible shootout with Houston a couple of weeks ago, and then that just snail race against Washington last week. Like, what is so inconsistent about this team's offense, or what's keeping them from being consistent?
Well, I think it's three different things. It's the fact that they have pretty much zero running game of any note. They have one rushing touchdown from a running back all season, and that was their fifth string running back in J.D. McKissic against Indianapolis in week four. They're struggling in the red zone. They're moving the ball up and down the field pretty consistently, but once they get into the red zone, they've only converted touchdowns on 12 of their 24 possessions inside the 20, and I think it's even worse inside the 10 because they can't run. They get one-dimensional and get a little stuck. And then it's penalties that force them to back up. I mean, they moved the ball. They had over 400 yards of offense against Washington last week and didn't score a touchdown until the fourth quarter, because just about every drive they crossed midfield, they were having an offensive penalty that put them in like a second and 14 or a second and 20 sort of situation, and they just couldn't get out of their own way. So those are the main areas of concern with Seattle and why they've struggled so far this season.
Curtis, on the running part of that equation, the different guys they have there, whether it's Procise, certainly Rawls before has had his moments, and then Lacy in the league has done well, not really in Seattle. Why do you think the back specifically, though, is that a line thing? Is it the individual running backs? Why aren't those guys really connecting?
It's all of the above. It's the running backs have been banged up and haven't really found a feel behind the offensive line. You know, Pete Carroll said a week ago that he wanted to focus on a single running back because he thought that they were spreading the carries around too much and not letting any one back get into a rhythm. And so they committed to Eddie Lacy, and then six carries into the game last week, he injures his ankle, and they have to go back to Rawls. And so there's any number of reasons. The running game looked like it was at least semi-competent with Chris Carson early in the season until he suffered a really bad high ankle sprain and a partial fracture of a leg. And, you know, that's pretty well knocked him out for the rest of the season. So it's just been injuries and, you know, offensive line issues and all of the above trying to kind of compounded into their ineffectiveness in the run game. But the addition of Dwayne Brown, I think over time here, should help them get a little bit more footing in the run game. You could even tell that it was improving a little bit last week, even though they didn't get a ton of run at it. So if they're able to kind of make some strides forward in the second half of the season, they should be in a pretty good spot, but they need to go out and actually do it.
Curtis Crabtree, Sports 950 in Seattle, with us here on the Lowdown. The Seahawks are in Arizona to kick off Week 10 of the NFL season, Thursday Night Football tonight. Curtis, Russell Wilson is the best fourth-quarter quarterback in the NFL. Do the Seahawks, do they, like, take it easy? I mean, it feels, do they just, like, coast until the fourth quarter and then Russell Wilson turns it on? I'm just trying to figure out a way to explain their kind of up and downs and why Russ has been so great in those closing moments of the games this season.
Well, I think part of it is the fact that defenses wear down, and, you know, his ability to run and give them a fresh set of legs and scramble drills and that sort of thing late in games obviously is an advantage for him. He's so good at making plays outside of the pocket that really tend to work well for them. And I think that's part of it. But, you know, part of it's just that they haven't performed in the early parts of the games like they have in the past. So you look at the last half of the 2015 season, Russell had, I think, 24 touchdowns and one interception over a 7 or 8 game stretch. And he was making all those plays for the most part from the pocket. And whether it's just a lack of confidence in the pocket he has or just a desire to make things happen out of nothing and not throwing the ball in some instances where he should, the offense just kind of is lacking structure right now. You know, they're designing plays to get the ball out in 3 to 5 step drops, and sometimes Russell holds the ball too long and then has to make something happen in a sandlot fashion to get the yards downfield. And it's tough to rely on that sometimes to really be a focal point part of your offense. And so, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to get it going. I think they've gone 20 straight games now where they haven't scored a touchdown on their opening possession. Finding points in the first quarter of games, period, has been difficult for them. So they haven't found themselves playing with leads very often either, which would benefit their defense. And then they'd probably spiral out of some of these games and make them to where they weren't so close. But they haven't been able to find their way to get in the end zone, score enough points early in games to kind of give themselves some cushion.
Curtis, a couple of weapons for Wilson have been banged up, at least Richardson and Graham. What's their status for tonight?
I expect both of them to play. Paul Richardson had a groin kind of tighten up on him here this week, and so they gave him a couple days of practice off, but he's expected to go. And I think Jimmy Graham's been on the injury report for at least the last month or so and has played in just about every game. So I wouldn't see any reason why he wouldn't be out there tonight either.
The Seahawks are so used to being atop of the NFC West division. What's the conversation around Seattle and even the Seattle Seahawks like regarding the Los Angeles Rams?
Well, Seattle did go down to L.A. and beat them down there earlier this year, though it took a pass just going off the fingertips of Cooper Kupp for them to do it on a final possession. They're a team that, even in Jeff Fisher's years over the past, have given Seattle problems because of their defense. They know Seattle's offense really well, and particularly Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn and Michael Brockers and that group up front do a really good job of keeping Seattle's offense bottled up because of the way that they play up front. And it's just one of those matchups. It's not a very good one for Seattle specifically, but seeing the explosion from their offense and finding some weapons on that side of the ball to really kind of push them forward has changed what the Rams are as a team, and they know that. But obviously having the half-game advantage on them right now with the head-to-head tiebreaker for now over the Rams is a good place to be in. Obviously the Rams have to come up here in December, and Seattle has to win that game to own that advantage outright. But, you know, the fact that they have that for now kind of gives them that edge still, even though they're a game back in the standings, and knowing that they could make up that game and clinch that tiebreaker advantage as the season goes along here. But the Rams are certainly a more formidable team now than they've been in the last several years.
Curtis, watching the game last week, I thought there's no way that Blair Walsh should be still with the team this week. How did he make it through with those missed kicks and still kicking this week?
Well, he was 12 of 13 on field goals and 17 of 18 on extra points before last week's game. And, I mean, look at the teams that have changed kickers so far this year. It's not like there's some star kicker sitting without a job now. It's, you know, it's kind of a lack of very good options that are out there. And so Blair Walsh has done some nice things for them throughout the year so far. Yeah, last week's a game that he's going to want to forget. But like I said, it's not like there's some, you know, hidden all-pro sitting out there without a job right now that they could go get and change. You'd be talking about somebody like Nick Folk, who was let go by Tampa Bay. Hey, Roberto Aguayo is back on a practice squad in Carolina right now. So there's not a lot of great options out there. And so Walsh is still probably the best option they have for now. But if he was to continue to miss kicks, then they might be forced into making a decision.
So that's tonight. That's the Seahawks in Arizona tonight for Thursday Night Football and the kickoff of Week 10 of the NFL season. Tomorrow night here on Sports 1140, we got Washington at Stanford. Curtis, is Washington underrated?
I don't know if they're underrated. I mean, when I personally watch them, and I've been at every home game they've had this year, I don't think they're one of the top four teams in the country. They may find a way to get back there, but they're not as good as the team that was that they had a season ago. The defense might be better, but I don't think the offense is quite as explosive. They're missing Chico McClatcher, their left tackle Trey Adams. John Ross obviously went to the NFL. That, you know, that hurt their offense. And then from a special team standpoint, they've had kicker issues like crazy. You know, they've had a ton of missed field goals this year between Tristan Vizcaino and Van Soderberg, their second string kicker. And so, you know, they just aren't quite as well rounded as they were a year ago. But they're still a very good college football team. Whether they're really worth that top four spot, I'm not certain. But if they keep winning, they'll certainly have a chance to end up there at the end of the season if all, when all's said and done.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, the roadmap for them. But one thing I'm thinking of for you guys up there is if Washington continues to win and Washington State does what they've been doing and they win, how wild do you expect the Apple Cup to be?
Yeah, it would be one of the more important ones in quite some time. I mean, I think it's been since the late 90s, since they've had early 2000s, since they've had games with really that much riding on it at the end of the day. I mean, Wazoo still has a chance to get to the Pac-12 North championship by winning the North, too. So, you know, that would create some incentive as well to have them have that opportunity to get to a major bowl game if they were to knock off Washington in Seattle. But Mike Leach has yet to play a Husky team particularly close since going to Wazoo, and I would think that this one would probably end up going the same way. But the fact that there would be as much riding on it as there would be when that game comes along would make it certainly interesting for sure.
Curtis, it was a pleasure, my friend. Let's do this again soon.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
That's Curtis Crabtree, Sports 950 in Seattle. As we mentioned, the Seahawks in Arizona tonight for Thursday Night Football. The 76ers here in Sacramento tonight at the Golden 1 Center. We'll talk about that. And J. Ross, don't talk to Draymond Green about Steph Curry peaking. You'll hear that next.